Hello there, Incorrigibleites! Here we finally are at the start of Campaign 2. If you're new here, welcome, and if you're a longtime listener, welcome back. Unfortunately, some may say, all you have for now is little old me, Leland Steele, here with the obligatory world lore episode. I think this is going to be fairly short. I don't want to dump a whole whack load of info right off the bat. I find it difficult myself to listen to something with really zero context. Obviously, this new world, new characters, it's all going to be new to everybody, including myself, Emily, John, Elena, and Bill, our players. What I wanted to start with, though, is more of a session zero with you. Now, obviously, the five Incorrigibles, we've had our own session zero, not, you know, off mic. We've had plenty of discussions that even started at the end of Aspara, near the end of Campaign 1, about what we wanted Campaign 2 to look like. And we wanted something that was going to feel, you know, kind of new, fresh, not just for us, but again, also for people that have, you know, been listening to us for the 5 years that we've been putting the show out. I think we're feeling the pressure. I mean, I'm feeling the pressure for sure, but I'm really excited about the new world. Our new world is Senta. The campaign is going to be most likely predominantly taking place in one city, in Stormcape. That's really going to be the newest aspect for us going into Campaign 2, because obviously Aspara was a very small world, but it was still a whole world, right? I mean, it was more like continent size, but there was still a bunch of different places that, you know, the party could travel to. I mean, there was a lot in Aspara that we didn't even see. I'm thinking with Stormcape, the city of Stormcape, that it's going to be a little different, because we're always going to be there, you know, barring any excursions maybe to surrounding territories, depending on where the story takes the players, or where the players drive the story, I should more accurately say. So adjusting to city life is what we're going to have to do, I think. So in this campaign, we're definitely going to have a lot more downtime activity stuff going on, which is something we never really utilized, some rules we never really got a chance to utilize in the first campaign. The way I envision kind of the rollout of the story is, you know, maybe the party will set out to accomplish something, and we'll have a series of episodes that may take place over, you know, a single day to a week possibly. But those will be consecutive days that we're experiencing as the players. And then in between those kind of like adventure vignettes, we have a period of downtime. And how long that period lasts, again, completely dictated by current events in the city, what's going on, influence from outside of the city, which you'll quickly learn as we get into our actual, you know, world history section, what and where those influences are coming from. We're also going to be having a number of homebrew rules that we've all agreed upon. There will be a list on our website, incorrigibleparty.com. And there will be a list on our World Anvil site, which is another huge change for us this campaign. World Anvil, for those that do not know, it's basically it's very popular in the TTRPG scene, but it's also popular for generally just writers. I mean, people that want to have a site where they can organize their thoughts and their narratives and their own lore for whatever story they're implementing, whether they're writing a book or creating a TTRPG campaign. It's very interesting. I think it's going to add a whole lot for us as players, and I hope as you as listeners, because that's where all of the information, or you know, 99% of the information, barring the little tidbits that I as the game master hold back for narrative purposes, but all of the extra information that you as a listener might be interested in going seeking out yourself, you're going to have a chance to do that at your leisure. A lot of the information will, when it becomes relevant to you as a listener and to the players, that's when it will come up in the episodes, right? I'll explain it, or it'll be narrated. That way we collectively get fed information when we need it, not here's all of the information. I hope you remember it in 100 episodes, right? The World Anvil page is always going to be changing. It's going to be getting updated, right? New articles are going to be added to it. New maps will be added to it. I have plans of a like monthly newspaper for the city, like the Storm Cape Herald or whatever we decide to call it. That will be in World Anvil too, right? So if like you and again, our players, like this is going to be such a great tool for the party, I think. I'll be making little articles that are basically current events, current event newspaper, right? So the players can go in and read about what's been happening in the city in this 2 weeks or maybe a month of downtime we're having between these little vignettes. They get to engage with the world in different ways as players as well. And I, as the game master, get to engage with the world differently too, because the way I run my games is that there's always this overhead. And I think in general, when you're creating a world, there's this overhead of the creation process. And I think I've mentioned a number of times in some of our past after parties, the front-loaded bits of creating the world make the back end playing within it and being able to, you know, roll with the punches and yes, and the party in the decisions that they're making, it makes all of that so much easier because you already have the foundation and you're so familiar with it and with everything that's laid out. Like, it's so easy to know, oh, when they go here, this is what's over there. And we're just applying that kind of that broad scale as a world, right, to a smaller city scale. And I really hope that makes the city just feel absolutely alive. I mean, Storm Cape is going to be a huge city, a huge coastal city. There's just people from all walks of life that can be encountered. There's just the daily life of so many Capeans within it that the party will be navigating around and through and interacting with. Obviously, the different governmental-esque hierarchies that come with a large city. Again, something that the party is going to be new for us as players in this campaign to navigate through. The other factor, the other change for this campaign is we don't have aspirations of it being 207 episodes like our first campaign. We're not going to put a number on the episode count. We're not going to say, once we hit 51, the campaign's over regardless of where the story is. Obviously, that's not us. We play for as long as we need to, and we take the story in whatever direction it goes because that's what we love. That the role-playing aspect of a TTRPG is what we lean on. It's what we enjoy the most about playing together. And I hope you as a listener, that's what you enjoy the most about our show. And I think if you listen to us, I can assume that is what you enjoy, because otherwise why would you come back and why would you keep listening to us? So with all of those ramblings, my own ramblings out of the way, I hope that gives you a general feeling of what this campaign is going to be like. I'm just really excited about all of the aspects of the city that we're going to get to experience. I think it's also something that comes as a challenge for our players. Again, for Bill, Elena, John, and Emily, because there's so much, there are so many aspects of the city that their characters will know. It's already knowledge that they're going to have, you know. If you live in a city for, you know, any number of years, obviously there's going to be things about it that you just know. But those are still things that will need to be explained to them as players, and of course to you as listeners. So it's going to be interesting finding that balance of, you know, them getting to play and act and role play with the information that they should have versus the information that they don't have, and the type of revelations narratively that may come about based on the information that they should have as characters, but they don't have as players. So again, this is just, it might not seem, I might just be blowing this out of proportion, but it might not seem like all of this is going to be much different. But from my perspective, it feels like for the show, it's just all uncharted territory. And it's really exciting to get to almost ad-lib that stuff, right? A defining characteristic of a proficient game master is one that can easily think on their feet and still make, you know, make it enjoyable for their players, make it make sense narratively. And I like to think I'm good at that. And again, the only way I can be good at that is through putting the front end work of it. So let's just get right in. Again, I'm sorry, I'm just rambling. And I'm just excited about it. So I hope you can feel that excitement. But I'm going to give you a very, very quick overview of the world of Senta and just what is going on in it. So Senta's recorded history dates back nearly 11,000 years. Obviously, people's milling about well before that, but this is kind of the period of time in which scholars and historians have been keeping track of events and documenting that kind of stuff. Periods of violence define much of the world. Early attempts for the various races to cohabitate, they're very short-lived, despite the efforts of some more open-minded leaders. This failing induced this great migration across Senta. It seems nearly all corners of the world were being settled or farmed, harvested for resources, mined, etc. The varying availability of resources across regions created a necessary link for survival. Cooperation and trading on larger scales became essential. So this necessity kind of surpassed the racial biases that many of the people of Senta have. And they were forced to get over, many of them, in order to survive in these new locations. Not all of these trading practices, though, were conducted in good faith. There were a select few that had the know-how and the means to take advantage of this kind of new world order, shaping it into their own image through centuries of influence, wielding generational wealth as one would wield a sword. After 2,500 years of kind of laying shipping routes and staking claims on resource-rich areas, competing for market share, three major enterprises emerged, comprising of a conglomeration of numerous smaller operations and landowners and workers that just got absorbed into these three major powers, the Forgeworn clan, the Veritas, and the Nautilus Shard. If there's some kind of manufacturing process or sellable product, transportation method, you can be sure to find one, two, or all three of these enterprises profiting from it. Consumers will most likely have the choice of three branded versions of the same item. Do you like the Forgeworn clan branded sword or the Nautilus Shard sword? Is there really a difference? Not really, just mostly comes down to branding and almost like a brand loyalty type of mentality. They're always, of course, in direct competition with one another. Corporate espionage is basically a cost of conducting business. Cooperation only occurs when it becomes mutually beneficial for two corporations to apply the necessary pressure on the third, which keeps a relatively balanced kind of three-way split of global revenues. It takes something of enormous economical value to propel one of the big three to the top. It takes zillium. Every mineral war has begun the same way. A sizable deposit of zillium is discovered and the mining rights are contested. With nation-level power and resources, Veritas, Nautilus, and Forgeworn, they clash. They conscript soldiers from towns and cities where they provide most of the employment opportunities, essentially using them as their personal armies to contest territory. They sabotage rival shipping lanes and production facilities. Applying pressure on those indebted to them, they leverage every relationship they've ever formed, all to get their hands on this material. Zillium itself, it seems to have near limitless applications. It's this kind of deep red rocky substance rumored to be the petrified remains of ancient gods. When it's ground into a fine powder, it can be incorporated into alloys to enhance strength and magical effects. You can mix it with fertilizer to increase growth rates and yields for crops. A pure zillium arcane focus can replace the need for any kind of component, regardless of that component's cost or if it's even consumed upon use. Pure smelted zillium weapons and armor are said to be unbreakable and never require maintenance or sharpening. A very small collection of pure Zillium artifacts were created during the first mineral war, but it was quickly concluded that this was just a waste of that resource's profitability. Diluting the Zillium and applying it to other products gave the highest return on investment. And as a result, most of those items, they were repurposed. Finding a pure Zillium artifact is incredibly rare today. Widespread knowledge of one possessing such an item is the fastest way for that person to get robbed or killed for it. The winning corporation, in quotations, of a mineral war gets to reap the rewards of the Zillium deposit, essentially. Depending on the deposit's size, the corporation could see skyrocketing profits for centuries. Even without an official Zillium-contained declaration, a product advertised as containing the mineral sees their value double. If a vendor can produce an authentic declaration, that added value can increase 10 or even 20-fold. Corporate contracts, they're negotiated and debated between the three. Disagreements during those negotiations just cause more casualties across Senta, until eventually something is signed by the big three, and the overt fighting and destruction ceases for a bit. Only lasting really until a new Zillium deposit is found and these tenuous agreements are broken. 6,000 years of conflict and tightly controlled peace times brings us to the start of the Third Mineral War and the founding of Stormcape. Over 8 centuries ago, 4 wealthy families decided to relocate as far north as they could, away from the latest war breaking out and away from any obligations or ties those families may have to the warring corporations. For a time, the Volthrums, Tuskers, Perals, and the Amworks kept Stormcape out of global affairs. As the city grew and the founding families yearned to keep up the lush lifestyles they were accustomed to, connecting with the rest of Senta was unavoidable. As city exports increased, tourism bringing an influx of new people to the city, the need to import items that Stormcape and the surrounding region could not produce, it was impossible to go unnoticed by the big three. Demands began to come in, calling for support in the Third Mineral War. For whom and to where the support goes, though, is not public information. But a city as large as Stormcape whispers at the volume of a shout, in the form of speculation that the founders are playing more than one side in the war. While the founding families retain ultimate say in the function of the city, the day-to-day operations are looked after by committee. The leaders of the city guilds commune weekly, running the aspects of the city related to their specific guilds. It's incredibly rare for a founder to actually attend these meetings in person. Instead, they always have some representative acting as a liaison between the guild leaders and themselves, the founding families. The effects of the Third Mineral War, they're slowly being felt on the city. Though the vast majority of Capians regard the founders as celebrities or even royalty, it would appear their shine has begun to tarnish. A growing number of citizens are becoming more outspoken against the war efforts, and subsequently the founders themselves. Like I said, I just wanted to give you a very, very generalized overview of kind of Senta's history and the major influences on it. You know, with the entire world and long-running history, like, there's just so many things that have happened and that can happen in like 11,000 years of recorded history. We'd be here for hours and hours if I wanted to recite to you everything that has ever happened throughout Senta and all of the different guilds and guild names in Stormcape. All of that information you can find on our World Anvil page, worldanvil.com/w/Senta-Leland Steel. I mean, there's going to be links on our website. We'll have links on our social media. There's going to be links in the show notes of this episode. You'll definitely be able to find it. You will have to make a free account to interact with the world of Senta. But I hope you find that it's worth it. And I hope that all of the effort that we're, putting in to enhance Campaign 2 is really going to be worth it. And I really do hope you just have as great a time as you did in Campaign 1. Again, if you're a returning listener, and if you're listening to us for the first time, buckle in, because I really, really love our roster of characters we have. And those are what you're going to hear next. The character intros are what are going to be releasing next. You will hear Emily and Elena's characters' intros, followed by John and Bill's. So thank you so much for listening. And thank you again for all of those returning listeners, your continued support, our amazing patrons that allow us to do all of these extra stuff. Really, they fuel the passion and the desire. Like, it's just, it's so nice to hear from everybody. It's so nice to just feel the support in whatever form it takes, whether or not you're just sharing the show with your friends, interacting with us in our Discord server, on social media. Any form of your support is just so appreciated. And I know I can speak for all five of us when I say that we're all incredibly appreciative of every single one of you. So appreciative that I'm not even going to be calling you Lelanders this campaign. That's how much we appreciate you. All right, well, there's only one thing left to say, and that is happy adventuring.
This has been a Sounds of Steel production.